for?
Yeah, I don't see my name on the front page.
You don't see your name on the front page? That's the fold. There may be purpose for that, Tom.
You left.
We will probably not debate it. We will just
let's go.
Any other corrections? Would you make a note of that, please, that Tom Johnson's name was left off the front?
She already did.
She already made that.
Yeah.
Any other corrections?
I made that one coming through the door.
He came in with that belligerent attitude.
That set the tone for this whole meeting.
All right.
That wasn't racism, that was discrimination.
Yeah, there's a lot of distinction there.
If there are no other corrections, ideas, and so forth, would there be any objections to accepting the minutes as the summary of the minute, as it appears? No other seconded? Any questions? In favor?
Aye.
Opposes? Everyone have, does everyone have a copy of the agenda in front of them? The first word on the agenda item there, minute summary, should have been minutes. Summary. I should like to talk for a moment about the tapes that become in the official minutes. It has still been a problem to get all of the minutes out in time and get an agenda in any 2-week period. That's rather heavy work for a complete secretarial staff. So, here's what we've decided that would be the most expedient way of handling it. We would have the recording as we are having it now, and the secretary would take notes here. Steno here would take the notes. And then, with the help of Mary and the rest of us, we would have the summary of the minutes ready for you early, based upon the minutes taken by the secretary here of this meeting. While the tape recording itself becomes the official minutes, and we'd keep those, but we would get the summary based upon her note-taking of this meeting. It eliminates our having to wait for 2 weeks and then go through it, transcribe it, correcting 30 pages and all of that. We would compare the two to see if we have left out anything important. Therefore, we should be able to get out the minutes to you now, earlier than they have been getting out, and have an agenda ahead of time in your hands. Any reactions at all?
As part of this, I would assume that whenever there is a topic that would involve any of the governmental institutions, that there would be a special alert that so that the representative would be fully aware of what might be a topic for discussion and what facts should be brought for proper answers to questions.
Yes. Well taken. Except that the advance copy of the agenda, George, might be sufficient to indicate that, and it may only be possible to suggest the general topic, whereas the second meeting on that topic might be the time at which the specialist might come.
If it was understood that that would be the cycle and that there would not be an expectation that full and complete answers would be achieved at the first meeting, why, this is even better.
Yes. The latter expectation, I suspect, would be the basis on which you'd operate.
Fine.
Nothing surprising would hit you, George.
That's...
You get it in time.
Very good.
I have a letter in front of me here that reads, as previous... Dear Mr. Wayman, thank you for sending me the notice of the next dialogue meeting, scheduled for Friday, September 13th, etc. As you previously as you were previously advised, I have a 9 a.m. appointment at San Diego State College. I will join you as soon thereafter as possible, Frank Curran. He will be here as soon as this meeting at State is over. The mayor, the city manager has another appointment, and we'll have Mr. Wilhelm setting in again for him this morning.
Correct.
I have no word from the two councilmen. Does anyone here have any word from Mike Schaefer or Tom Hum?
I think he mentioned the last meeting.
He did mention it. He thought he said he'd be able to get away, though. Has anyone word from Tom? Have you?
No.
Nothing from Tom. For those who have not been here before, and I only see maybe two people or so, that is who's first time is today. Yeah, as I know that Bud Place here sitting at the table, many of you probably know from the county, is sitting in for the supervisor, Dent.
Oh, excuse me. Sure.
You got to get to
wide open. Sitting in for Mayor Curran. And you're visiting with us, or just the...
I'm sitting in for Jack.
Jack Katz, all right. All right. Anyone else? No, then everyone is sitting in for someone, so we don't have any outside visitors today, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, Frank Martinez? Sitting in for?
No, I'm sitting in for Impact.
Yeah. Good. Any others sitting in for anyone? Fred for?
Arms for Wizard of the.
All right.
Alone to you.
If we pick up then number one item on the agenda, the format for this meeting, and look at the rest of the agenda, I think I can make it short. We will continue with 3, 4, 5, and 6 after a few observations. First, in looking back over the meeting of 2 weeks ago, I thought that there were several important things said or pointed out, or movements, if you wish, made. Whether or not each of you would define it as progress is a different story, and I will not talk to that point. I simply want to make the observations. First observation was that in such a discussion as we are having, a series of them, most of us are apt to become impatient because we don't see immediately that tangible progress or hear immediately a commitment to move from point A to point B. Therefore, we begin to be a little impatient that we're not making progress in this meeting or not moving fast enough. I would suggest on that point that whether we do it now or later, the process of taking each point and working through it and arriving at common understanding of where we're going will occur either now or later, and that kind of clarification is necessary in order to move on to the next point. The other thing in that regard is that some people are at different levels of understanding, sophistication, and knowledge of what problems are, which means that their impatience is likely to be intensified because, having gone through this kind of exercise many times, he or she might feel that it's a wasted time for him or her, and therefore wishes that this group move on in a hurry to a point in their minds that would indicate more progress. In this kind of dialogue or discussion group, the process is extremely important that those of us who might be at point A wait till everyone is at that point, or back up as it were, until we're all able to move along at some understandable pace. Therefore, any kind of discussion such as we're having here is important from the standpoint of the process alone, And I'm trying to suggest that as we move on, that we be careful how we define whether or not we're making steps or movements or progress based on our own impatience. We'll get there, is all I'm saying. So if we have to spend two or three more sessions in what many would term volleying or aspiring or whatever you want to call it, it's important, I'm trying to say. That is important in this process. I'm just pleading for an understanding of the process as well. Other observation is that last 2 weeks ago, we had one individual to share with us something that was very private. And I think only two people referred to it openly in the meeting and noted what to him it was in reality, regardless of how we thought about it. I'd like to point it out again, specify it, and tell you how I see it. An individual shared with us a whole lifetime of preconditioning and training. In one or two little sentences, he said he owned a store and he would not hire Negroes, he said, specifically, because he felt that the customers would not support his store and therefore he would go out of business. And he said he thought about it, reflected on it, and he began to see it in a different light for what it really was. And he said that he's now trying to compensate for that. Now he hires Negroes in other capacities and so forth. He shared this with us, and some of us naturally were critical of him, and maybe that's where it ought to be. That is not my point now. The observation I make on it is, for him, that might have been 10 miles of growth in a second. For him, that might have been growing up like from 5 years old to 25 years old in a day. Even to acknowledge it is difficult. To see it for what it really is more difficult. And then to share it with a group, let me say minority persons who obviously would tear him apart, to share it, took even more courage. And I'm saying that as we move in this process, I think we ought to be aware of these kinds of individual growths, individual realities, individual movements, and at least make note of them and be aware of them, whether we agree or not that it's good or bad. Seems to me that we should not let these things go by unnoticed. That's all from me on the observations. Any other observations before we get to the other? Tom and John.
Quick one, yes. I think that as long as we work at this fundamental thing that we've been hung up on for the past two or three weeks, that in itself is progress. And I say that because I don't believe that we need dialogue at this level to continue what we've always been doing. Public officials know how to spend federal money and quote token unquote gestures, and we know how to tell them that that's not the ticket. If we don't reconcile these differences as a beginning point, then we actually don't need each other in dialogue at this level. So in my opinion, the real value of the dialogue that we're in is to try and arrive at something that's unique and different for San Diego. And we're on this one hurdle. If we get over this hurdle, this one thing we're wrestling with, then we have laid the basis for some real effective partnership between minority persons and public officials. But I do think it's essential that we get over this one hurdle, because that's where it's all going to start from. And as long as we are wrestling with it and fighting with it and trying to get over this common frame of reference, get over that hurdle, then I think there is progress. Only when we leave this point without establishing a common frame of reference and start talking about the little bits and pieces without establishing this frame of reference, then I think we have lost whatever progress we started.
Carol, I want to reiterate what Tom said, but add another dimension or even shift gears just a little bit. I'm really concerned about the pragmatic operation of the dialogue in the sense that, and you touched on it, the levels of growth within the group, and yet we find new people who are coming in and sort of open-ended, and I think it's going to really cause us not to make the kind of a general movement that we need and we are seeking here. And I was wondering if I might not throw it out of a reaction that we meet on a monthly basis so that those busy public officials who cannot make it every 2 weeks would be here. Because first we need them, and this is what it was all about in the beginning, I believe, so that they might make some kind of commitment to the community and to us. And if they met on a monthly basis rather than, and I'm not denigrating the people who are representing them, they probably need it as much or more. But I'm simply suggesting that if we had the open-ended type of thing where people will be coming in all the time to achieve the objectives of the dialogue.
May I make a comment?
On that one?
Well, on
okay, then we'll pick it up. All right.
I agree that we've made substantial progress around the point that Tom was talking about, that public officials are beginning to see, I think, what we're talking about. That is basically a racial type problem. But I think that the next move, even though this one isn't fully accepted yet, or perhaps even to aid in the acceptance of this this idea a little bit more fully, is the realization that this isn't exactly a two-way street in the problem correction situation, because it's a controlled controlled situation. The minority people cannot move down the road of problem correction or problem solving in this instance. It's going to have to be mostly the majority of people who are going to do the moving to correct the problem, because the minority people have no power, no positive power. The only positive power we have is this talking, and the only real power, any kind of power at all, is negative, power to disrupt, you know, and that's been going on. And we don't want negative power. So you're going to have to use your power, and I think this is going to reflect itself in helping to break down the stereotypes. The stereotypes that all Negroes are lazy, all Mexicans are dirty and lazy, and all those various kinds of things, which keep the people from getting jobs. And if they're lazy, why do so many work on two jobs or more at low pay in order to continue their livelihood? And why would 15,000 people in Oakland apply go to a job fair if they were lazy and didn't want to work? But we perpetuate these stereotypes, and we say all they want to do is receive welfare and those kinds of things. Now, and these, I'm arguing, are rationalizations on the part of the majority community to maintain the secondary or tertiary role for minority people. And you people, the majority leaders, are going to have to be the people to help break down these stereotypes, because we can talk until, you know, it gets kind of warm someplace, and it's still, or cold, whichever way you feel it. And it won't change unless the change comes from the people who have the power to change, the people who have the power to give jobs. Because a man can look all day long and he can't find a job and nobody will hire him. And none of his friends or his neighbors or his ethnic group have any job to give. They don't control any industries, they don't control any businesses of any significance. They control nothing that can be of any substantial significance to large numbers of minority people. So the movement has to come from the majority group. And I just want to get this in here so that we can keep moving on.
All right. Were there any comments on John's point? Joe?
This is to John's point. I would like to offer support for this simply because as I look around today, I see a lot less in terms of administrative people than I saw the previous two times, and I would hate to think that now that the summer is over, that this will be the consistent thing. So if we can make a situation where they can be here to dialogue, then this would be more advantageous to the group and the discussion.
Amen.
Well, I'd like to comment on John's statement also and offer an additional thing. And that is that I've believe that one of the reasons that we wanted to meet every 2 weeks was to somehow get across the idea of the urgency of the importance that this is or should be, if it is not, a very high priority item on our agenda. On the other hand, it seems to me that for rather practical, mechanical reasons, that kind of meeting won't be able to take place every 2 weeks. But I would suggest that at some point in our considerations of how we go with the dialogue group, that there be smaller groups working on specific problems which do meet oftener than once a month, and to carry on the dialogue around specific problems or issues, and that the larger meeting take place once a month. But I do think it's important that this is not the kind of thing that began with, I think, the sense of real importance and urgency, and then begins to decrease in time, and then it becomes that you come every other month, and pretty soon we're back panic-stricken in April or May, and summer's upon us and we haven't really achieved much. So I think there needs to be some very real gut kind of work that takes place between the intercessions and oftener than once a month. The other thing I'd like to do is to, I suppose, indulge just momentarily in reading an editorial out of the Christian Science Monitor of August 30th, 1967. I think it's particularly relevant for some of the things which have been said in the past and some of the things which have been said today. It's called Opportunity for Progress. Paul wrote to the Romans, "The good that I would, I do not. But the evil which I would not, that I do." This wise comment on men's actions would seem to apply with particular force to the racial situation in the United States today. Although Americans in general accept the vision of a society without discrimination or artificial barriers, and although the nation as a whole is committed to equality of rights, opportunities, and obligations for all, progress in these fields is too often frustrated by a kind of perversity which finds men taking wrong steps and neglecting right ones. Seldom in American history has there appeared to be greater confusion over the ways and means of achieving a right goal than prevails today on the urban social crisis. Nor is this surprising. It is frequently found that when a man, a group, or a nation is called upon to meet a dire emergency, he or it is assailed by a flood of conflicting thoughts, discouraging doubts, and frightening imagination. Unless faced and thrust aside, these would becloud one's vision and paralyze action. On the other hand, it has been truly said that devotion to an honest achievement makes that achievement possible. The United States must solve its racial crisis, and it must solve it with the least possible delay. Every wasted day makes the problem more severe. The challenge must be tackled quickly, decisively, and wisely. If so, this honest achievement can be won. The danger today is that too many persons have begun to say that the problem is too big, that it is intractable, that the non-whites are irresponsible in their demands, and that the whites remain unyielding. If these statements were true, then the United States would indeed be in a desperate way. But that is not remotely the case. There is in the United States a fund of knowledge, of skill, of wealth, and above all, of goodwill, which will put it fully within America's capacity to solve this admittedly tremendous problem. The need is to fight back against the forces of confusion, apathy, and discouragement. These columns have stated before, and we believe that it bears repeating, that the racial crisis has arisen at this time because the moment is right for solving it. The unfoldment of history has a practice of doing just this. Seen in this light, the urban crisis is an opportunity for progress rather than an indication of national retrogression. I offer this simply because it seems to me to echo some of the notions that people have stated in our last two sessions, that we do have within this room the possibility of putting together the kinds of people with the kinds of statements of the issue that solve them. And the other thing, it seems to me, which needs to keep, and I hear it keep coming through over and over again, and that is the people who are here are, it seems to me, in accord with the vision of our community being the kind of community potentially that can provide a model. That it should not simply go along, it should not simply be one step behind, but our belief in ourselves and our community is of such that we want it to be one which does indicate the way that this can be done. It seems to me that this is a human problem, and it's a problem of men and women, which can be solved by their sitting around and talking in this way and arriving at programs and implementing those programs so that we do more than window dressing. We make a reality something which is a vision at the moment, but one I think we all hold and all correctly assessed is possible in San Diego, if no place else, and that should be possible that we can do it.
And thanks for the editorial. I'll read it in 2 minutes at least. Any comments before we move on? Leon?
Well, I thought we were still on John's point.
We are.
I know Glenn Conkey was on there. I want to support him in one sense. I think that that the public officials, the top level public officials, ought to be here. But I think that that biweekly meetings are not too often, because I think that there's nothing more important in this nation today than this problem we're talking about. Nothing is more important. I think we can go to a more important meeting if anything comes out of one of these meetings. And I think that the solution to the problem is to somehow or other get into the minds of the public officials the importance of attending this thing if they expect to find some solutions, because I think they'll get a lot more here and the community will benefit a lot more by their meeting here on every 2 weeks than, and it's better to miss another meeting, I think, than to miss this one. That's what I'm trying to argue.
Carol, I didn't mean that the 2 weeks, Leon, was too often. I simply meant the pragmatic thing that they will not show up, and if they don't get the message, it poses a real problem. And apparently they haven't to that extent, and that's too bad, because if you're really going to move forward, you're going to have to meet. And if you don't meet, then why be here?
I like to feel that I'm in a fairly important position in the city. I came from areas where I was the top administrative official and came into a position where I have far more responsibility at the present time, speaking for the manager's office. I'm happy that I have the opportunity to sit on these meetings. 3,000 of the employees in the city report to the departments I'm responsible for. We try to operate as kind of a team operation. I won't make any excuses for our office. However, many times I'm thrust into the position of alternating, as it may be, for the city manager. But these are observations, and let me say this. I hope that anything I say here, well, I know that anything I say here is coming from the manager. If I make a decision, he'll back me up. And I'm not afraid to make a decision if it comes to that point. If it's something that should be discussed further, I'm sure I would make the kind of an answer that the manager would make. But let me say this. I learned something, and after all my years of experience from this meeting last time, and I think there is some value of the people alternating in these areas. For some time now, I've been concerned with this business. I've seen in our city a sincere desire on the top part of management trying to encourage more employment. I personally was directly responsible when the program came up this summer to put it together to try to get more people in the NYC and this other side program we worked up, and we're working on a program for the future. And I had the impression that there was a lack of acceptance of this as an effort to do something more. But I learned from the last meeting that this isn't true. I think the indelible part of that meeting is Tom Johnson's definition of what this racism is. and this is a failure to accept the normalcy of the right that, or the fact that allows equal opportunity to even be debated. And I see through now a shield that I didn't see before, and I think this is important. And as I say, I don't make any excuses for the manager not being here, because to some extent, yes, he is the top person, but it's kind of a two-prong or even a three- or four-prong team effort in our office. I would like to feel that the manager's office gained an awful lot for this insight that I have. It's put me to thinking, and I'd like to sit in a lot more of the meetings, frankly, because sitting with the Civil Service Commission as our representative there, being in charge of employee services, I think this is important to our office. And these are just observations I throw out on the table.
I think the discussion on the consistency then of top dogs being here, big boys, maybe yields two or three interesting points. Perhaps it's the first, second, and third, or maybe fourth persons in a department that should be invited. And say two of them maybe could make it consistently, and then if one is absent that day, the other one would be here, as opposed to one or the other every time. Maybe this is a point we might like to look at. For example, the first and second top boys from your department, therefore if he's not here, you would still be here, and if you weren't here, he would be here, as opposed to one or the other initially being invited.
I think as large as our organization is, no one individual necessarily expects or is expected to have every bit of information at his fingertips. And I think there may be two or three people who, no, they're not number one, but they speak for number one. That's a matter of delegation. As I say, I throw it on the table for what it may be worth.
George.
Carol, this is fine. I think this is well taken, the suggestion that we consider an alternate or two individuals, first and second. But so many times it seemed to become a habitual where the second man is sent consistently and the first man seems to stay away. I think that's what happened in our original dialogues, and that's why we got to the point. So it got so loose that the second man came so often, then it became general, and he began to send the third man, and then we got down to the fourth man, and that's when we said no. So we would not like to get off into the same thing again, whereby the second man becomes a consistent man. And often that's fine, but hopefully that the first man would make every attempt to come.
Just one more, Carol. I think I was talking, I'm fairly certain that John was talking about political people, not department people. I think this is what we were talking, weren't we, John? Political, yeah. We were talking about elected political people.
Yes, I think the maybe it needs recapping here and tie in both what Leon has just said and what George. Let's go back for 6 weeks and then simply recap the concept that was involved, namely that public officials, while they delegate their different assignments, the public officials being the responsible ones for the implementation of that particular policy, as well as the writing of that particular policy, should hear directly community persons. That was the first concept, if that's paraphrased correctly. Therefore, they should be at this meeting. The second was that, in addition to the public officials, as the representatives of the people, they therefore are responsible to people as such, or as opposed to the administrative people being appointed and therefore responsible in terms of line duty here, directed to those public officials or the people who appointed them. The other point related to that was, I think George's point was that from a pragmatic standpoint, many times the person who actually does the job is not the top one, obviously, and the person who really influences more decisions many times is this other guy somewhere in the pyramid or hierarchy. Therefore, George's point was, and we discussed it at length before, was that when the top ones were invited, they did not talk to that point. They did not recognize that. They did not even acknowledge receiving the invitation. And the message that comes through in these instances to the minority is that, again, it's not important that they even recognize that they have been invited to attend. That is, they ignore the invitation to even attend. This was a message that comes through. For example, if the big boys could not come, then the group was saying, at least they should write a letter or sit down with some of the group and say, we're sorry we can't make it because we're busy that day, but we will take care of it, as opposed to simply sending the second or third person and ignoring the request to attend. So I think all of these things were behind the concept that was thrown out at our first meeting. Any other reactions on the three points that have been mentioned? On Tom's point, John's and Leon's?
I speak only to clarify what, as it relates to city schools. First, I think I'm correct that in the initial organization, the schools were not the base for the organization. It started as a city conferring with community people. It became apparent, however, that some of the problems were related to school problems. During the summer period, it was true that vacation schedules and other things resulted in about four different people being the representative of the city schools. Sometime in August, in one of those meetings, there was discussion to it, and the minutes that came back, more particularly the annual report from the representative who attended, indicated that it was requested that someone at the level of superintendent or associate superintendent be a regular member. When that was communicated, it was discussed with Dr. Daylord, and it was agreed that I would be the one and that this was in line with the request as stated. And I have been a regular attender without exception since that time, and am now designated by the superintendent to make this part of my planned, scheduled responsibility. So I'm committing that I will be here on a regular basis. In part, I am now going to disagree with one of the points of discussion. I personally believe that it is not appropriate for this group to ask a member of the Board of Education to be a regular member here and to be asking for comments of commitment and other things. Remembering that our Board of Education is basically not a paid staff assignment. They're basically volunteers and are only remunerated for the periods when they are on duty and can't do their regular work. It's not a salary by any means. And there is a basic point of government organization, namely, that as individuals, the five people who are board members are without power. As a collective group in session as a Board of Education, they are the ones who make the policy for the district. And I'm still saying that this being the case, there are times when issues, problems that may come out of this dialogue should be brought to the Board of Education, but as the collection of five meeting in session. And for the topics, as I'm aware that you've discussed so far, I'm coming back and saying, I think it is appropriate then that I be the designated representative of the superintendent and here on a regular basis, which I'm committing myself to do.
Point before us is whether or not the original group and asking that a Board of Education member be present, what we discussed, still valid or invalid after hearing George's comment. Tom?
With respect to the gave two reasons. The second reason, I accept that, the fact that it's a five-member board, and I don't see the point in having a board member here. In that context, I don't accept the other, the fact that it's not a paid position. Mine isn't either. I don't think Joe is getting paid for being here, and perhaps a few others are, but not all of us. So I'm on vacation right now, as a matter of fact, and nobody's paying me for being here, that's for sure. But the other, yes, I think that's valid.
This is the one that's basic.
Yes, I would agree with Dr. Hall on the one. What I'm suggesting is that maybe all five ought to be invited.
Second.
All right, but then you have a problem, and you have to remember the problem. Then it becomes a public meeting of the Board of Education. And it's they can act only as it is their meeting acting on it. Now, there could be occasions when you are planning an agenda and you have a problem that is obviously a problem of the public schools, and to invite all five of them to be there at that meeting in order that all of them hear your concern, this I think could be appropriate.
Right. Well, the only point I was trying to make was that since this is a dialogue and it's not an action in that sense, it's a Board of Education, we couldn't ask them to act on anything. But in terms of getting them to effect some changes in attitudes, in terms of discussion and dialogue, would be most effective, especially because this is one of the critical problems in San Diego and the overall urban crisis.
I mean, may I also, the citizens,
so that we don't rehash another discussion we've had, may I ask that comments then be addressed to this latter point, as opposed to what George just mentioned, namely that we did discuss, just as we discussed it with relation to the city council. We know they could not be here as a body because they'd get in the same boat. We therefore started out with a given. The given was we could not invite all board members. Thus, we had to decide, should we extend the invitation to some of them? So if we keep it at this point with the understanding that your point, George, has been discussed in detail, now the point is, should we still invite one or two board, or maybe four of them, so as not to have all of them, or two of them? I think we should still keep this point before us. George.
Yeah, I think it's quite obvious within our city, and especially within the school system, that it would be very fruitful, these dialogues, for the members of the Board of Education to receive this type of dialogue. And I think it would be very fruitful for the members of the City Council, likewise, to receive this. And you might invite seven of those versus the eight that are total on the council. But I think the reason for this is that the information that will be gained here will change the attitudes of the leaders, and certainly the leaders who are in elected positions are those who are in a position to effect change.
Yeah.
I want to say what both George and John have said, which is that this is an educated process, that we, it's the political people we want to reach, people who make the policy. But now, I don't know about the Brown Act, what's precluding inviting these people, all the members here. Yeah, it would seem to me to be the same as if they went to any other group meeting. What would stop them from coming here as individuals, just to listen to what's going on?
May I clarify that point? The technical point here is that if such a body comes as a body, there must be another condition, and it is here. We deliberately set it up that way. If the press is here, for example, if the press is here, the entire school board could be here. If the press is here and covers it as a meeting, as the press obviously is, the city council could be here with the mayor. If you get what I'm saying, that it is set up so that all board members could be here, George, as long as the press is covering it as an open meeting, the mayor and the city council could be here as long as it's covered. And maybe Julian want to talk to that, or maybe Ms. Wilhelm.
That's the point. Okay. The press is here, and it's an open public meeting.
Right.
But now
there's no legal basis. There's no legal problem now, I'm saying.
I accept that. But now let me speak to the other point, that these are people with other jobs and duties and scheduled only for their 4 to 6 meetings a month as part of their duty as Board of Education members. On any given time, whether you have 1, 2, 4, 5, legally there is no problem, and if it's a one-shot deal, I think you could, in fact, get them to be in attendance. But one of the concerns that John Johnson was talking to was continuity, and this is what primarily I was talking to, and saying that for purposes of continuity, I am the designated person to be here, and I assure you of continuity. But I don't think you're going to achieve continuity of 3, 4, 5 of the Board of Education members being here 2 weeks and 2 weeks and 2 weeks on a long enough period to achieve this continuing education that is one of your concerns.
All right, we also had the invitation went to the chairman of the Board of Education, who met with the CIC. Welcome, Mayor. Glad you got back in time. The letter went to the chairman, who did meet with me in the office, and indicated that on Fridays he could not make it, but would designate Louise Dyer as a representative. Something must have happened this morning. I don't think we got a call from her. I don't know why she's not here. But the point then is that there is no problem with regard to the Brown Act. If there are other problems then, in terms of the board members being here consistently or otherwise, it would be a problem other than that of the Brown Act. So if we can eliminate then the Brown Act, that is, all of them could be here, since legally we have removed any of the conditions. That is, the press is here. So in terms of discussion, then we should talk in terms of other problems maybe that preclude some coming. But the chairman did indicate he would try to have consistently the same person here from the board. Any other comments on that? George?
Well, then I would take it then that the only other point would probably be priority as far as this particular dialogue is versus other activities that members of the Board of Education or the City Council or other public officials might have. And I'd like to go back to that point which was originally made by Leon, I think, when it's saying that within our country today, that I believe that the race problem is a priority. It is priority number one. We have two. One out of the country, which is the Vietnam War. Secondly, in this country, is racial discrimination and the racial strife and racial unrest. So it's to this point where I feel that other meetings, like maybe the city manager has, or the mayor has, or other persons have, or Board of Education, I believe that this first, I think that the calendar should be adjusted around the particular problem, which is priority number one, and then the other meetings would fall in place in accordance after the schedule of this particular meeting here. It's not to show respect for black people, as we have called this meeting, but it's to show respect in accordance with the problems that we have facing our nation today. And I think it's to that extent that they should make adjustments in their schedule so as to meet priority number one, which is racial discrimination in the United States.
All right. May I also state for the record, Ed Butler would have been here. I met with Ed this morning at 8:30 in the office, and the reason he is not here is because he is attending a hearing, a legal matter, partly as a result of an insight gained here in his last two sessions. And we've been meeting with him on a particular legal matter, and this morning it came up in court. And the decision, as we talked, was whether or not he would come here first and then try to catch part of it later or go there. It was my opinion that because of the nature of this particular court hearing, for the first time, I thought the city attorney himself ought to be sitting in the back of that room this morning watching what's going on. And we can't go into the details of this, but it's an interesting illustration of what some of the community persons have been saying. He is over at that meeting, and as you know, courts, they might go on this morning until 10, 11, or 12. If he is out of there before 12, he will come back. But it was my opinion that he personally this morning should sit in on that court hearing, and I think it's good. Any other reactions? Then can we get this one point clarified then? I'm hearing, if I'm reading you right, that the group still wishes to have the Board of Education members invited here and insist upon their being here as public officials or elected officials. Am I reading you right?
Right.
Or extend the invitation again.
The essence of what I get from this, Carol, is that we want continuity at the policy-making level. This is the first thing.
Right.
Now, so the question is whether or not it requires having all of the board members here in order to get it. Continuity is the thing at the policy-making level, and however we can get it, then that's what we want.
May I offer something that might be, we might settle on a sort of a group of people who've been coming or who expect to continue to come regularly, and then invite people who may come irregularly, but not expect to bring them to the same level as the rest of the group at each meeting, or keep going back to the beginning all the time, and just let them get what they can get when they're here. You might consider that, in that case, board members and council, all council could be invited.
Who are we going to pitch our question of continuity? That's a key. The rest can come irregularly.
The list that we drew up first, I think each one got a copy the last time of those that were invited. We could still use that as a basis and have that as a group of those that we would like to see here consistently with the others who've been sent, or they might designate as those who might come irregularly, if this is one way of handling that. Is that satisfying? We have the original list. I have it here, Phil. I have the original list of the persons who were invited to attend. This includes all the top boys in each of these areas we've selected.
I wonder if a small group of people representative of those who are here, much smaller group of people representative of those who are here, go over that list and then resolve the question of who we have to have the kind of continuity that we want. Then we won't have to wrestle it out here around the table.
Is it the prerogative of the chair to designate such a group? We'll meet and let us know by next Wednesday, resolve this. May I have volunteers? About five people, three people could meet. Have Joe of our staff, Joe McGuire, Tom Johnson,
yeah.
George, Urban League, Leon, Mary, Phil. Did we get all those? Mary, Joe, George Stevens, Leon. And
how about Dr. Hall over there?
And you have just volunteered your services.
I've been volunteered. Volunteer.
Would you add the volunteer George Hall, please, to that list? And Tom Johnson. Did I miss
you
any?
Volunteer, Bill.
All right.
Then you would,
may I ask one of you to chair it and simply get together after this and decide when you're going to meet? Give us a buzz so we can get it all lined up for next meeting. Mary, would you call each one and Dr. Hall, would you chair that meeting?
Alright.
Would you volunteer please to chair that meeting?
I have been volunteering.
Will you volunteer again, George? Mary, would you get with him if you need any clerical work or whatever, use your office or whatnot? George, you have it, whichever way you want to work it out. We can resolve that way. If we get back to the agenda then, number three, areas of agreement on definition of the fundamental problem, continued. Present position of community representatives, framework and perspective of subsequent dialogues, continued. Five, exploration and expansion of diagram on differential perception, continued. Those three are attempting simply to raise the question, shall we continue for a while the discussion on the fundamental problem? We can start by looking at the chart if you wish, or we can start by simply throwing it open. Shall we continue with arriving at some kind of consensus on the areas of agreement or exclusion in terms of the fundamental problem, namely definition of racism as accepted in our minutes, accepting the normalcy of discrimination or our racist society? It is open now for discussion. We can do it by referring to the diagram or otherwise. The diagram is on page 5.
I suggest that we try and quickly arrive at why it's important that we each have the same frame of reference.
Say that again, please, Tom.
I suggest that we try and quickly arrive at why it's important that we this group all have the same frame of reference from which to evaluate whatever it is we are going to do.
We're all using the same glossary of terms.
The law of the mayor.
Said that, that we're all using the same glossary of terms.
Why don't you write that on the board?
Maybe we should start as we did the last time and take an example, maybe, and use an example as the attempt to arrive at what you're saying, Tom, and use it.
I just want to say, Carol, I think it's, I think we've gone over ground we've already covered. That differential perception diagram you drew up is, this says it perfectly. Where do we go from there?
Okay. Joe.
In speaking through that and having read what the mayor said last week at the last meeting, I think this was a show of his awareness of the problem. And if we can get the rest of the city officials to move to the point of his statement, then we are about to make progress, you see, because this is where the minority community is today. We have been saying just exactly what he said ever since the dialogue started. So if we can get others here from the administrative side to move to the point in terms of vocal commitment that the mayor has, then we're on the move forward.
All right. Joe, why don't you refresh our mind? Instead of asking the mayor, you are the one who have that statement in mind, which is important because it came through to you a certain way, right? Regardless of how you said it. Why don't you recap just a statement or two about what he said that, that you are using right now as a good example of what we're talking about. You know, just capture it so we can all get on the same frequency.
Okay. Mayor Kern, as it comes out in the meeting, as it comes out in the minutes, Mayor Kern stated for public record that he believes, he understands that we have, in essence, a racist society, and that the problems here are caused, the problems that we have are racist-oriented. In other words, they disseminate from the cause, which is racism, rather than some other ambiguous point which we've had discussed and thrown at us any number of times.
Okay. Mayor, I deliberately asked him because your statement was meaningful, rather than to have you, if you didn't mind having your statement interpreted, because that's the importance of having the statement.
I don't mind having any of my statements interpreted. Everybody seems to be doing it these days.
Well, here's one that came out of the paper, which we thought was extremely... Did everyone read this other statement that says, Kern tells moves to ease race troubles? He reiterated some of the statements there, and I think Joe's point is well taken. It says, Mayor Kern last night said the city is sitting on a powder keg, not of its own making. I won't go over the whole thing, but later on, and I don't think I'll be taking it too much out of perspective, he said, we are sitting on the same kind of powder keg as other communities, but it was not created here, and we have so far successfully avoided trouble. And he told of the efforts many city departments, school officials, and councilmen are making to that end. He goes on to state, a city program originally given little chance of success to hire 100 Negro and 100 Mexican Americans, hardcore unemployables, he said, without skills, uneducated, and with criminal records to work in city government this summer, he discussed. He goes on to then indicate the hope for the future. He says, hopefully, the mayor said, this would assist the state in matching manpower with available jobs, after spelling out some other things, and said federally financed job training programs here are working well, and praised efforts of responsible members of the Negro community to solve the problems without resorting to violence. Kern also took issue with opponents of the city's general plan, etc. So I guess you are being quoted widely and so forth, and Joe's point I think is well taken. Shall we talk at that point or shall we move on with it? We're talking the point four, three, four, and five, essentially. Tom, you had any suggestions on doing what you mentioned there and tying it in with Joe?
Well, that was really the point that I was talking to, and Joe hit it on the head. When I said the importance of for all of us to have the same frame of reference, I think Joe was saying the same thing, that he's trying to move to that point for all of us to have the same frame of reference, and asking for it to be adopted. To assist the process, my suggestion was aimed at trying to establish the benefit for this, and why it is necessary for us to develop this future partnership with public officials, for us to be talking about oranges and oranges and not apples and oranges as we start to evaluate the things that are being done.
Okay, Josh?
And I was thinking that if we're going to go forward in the dialogue, that maybe we could ask each group, what could you compromise on? What could you work to arrive at a consensus? Some say that the racist term connotes hatred and that kind of thing. What would the minority community accept as something else, and what would they accept if they will not move off center?
All right. It seems to me, John, you're also asking what would be their framework of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But let me react to that. Earlier, and I agree with John and the point that he's making here. Earlier, I made a statement once to Mr. Butler that in talking about racism and trying to define this thing as racism or racialism, call it what you will, that didn't mean that we expected everybody to run out of this room and start shouting, we live in a racist society. It's only for the purposes of this dialogue and our working together, it was only for the purpose of us establishing a common frame of reference here. And
right,
then, right, and then when we start doing these things that we're talking about, that whatever we do will be done from this frame of reference and make it aimed at the fundamental thing that we all see. Now, it may take many forms. It might take the brotherhood thing that Joe was talking about. It might take the $100,000 that we spent during the summer from the federal government and giving it to a public relations agency, which may be do more good than furnishing a few jobs. It might take thinking of the mayor to always think in terms of the opportunities to raise the question before the question as things come up in the city. It could take many turns, but the essence of it was to simply use that as a means for establishing a common frame of reference, not to run out in the street and start yelling it.
Okay, Glenn?
It seems to me there is one thing that ensues from that, and I agree with Tom that what we had hoped to achieve was not people running from this room and proclaiming that this was a racist society. But that once one acknowledged that, once one really felt the import of that, then it seemed to me that it did mean that one had to do something, that one could no longer do nothing, and that it probably was not appropriate that anyone who really understood this wouldn't even say that, what do you want me to do, go out and proclaim it. When one understood that, then it seems to me one knows fairly clearly some of the things that one needs to do.
Then the next step.
Right. Then the next step comes, and it seems to me there are two directions for this. One I would regard as the positive programs, which engage more and more people in the kinds of relationships that make them fully participant without regard for race or anything else in our society. And the other is the program which, it seems to me, takes an aggressive, firm position in regard to those people who have the racist attitude which they intend to enforce by the alteration of our institutions, by closing the door on opportunities, and that it be a matter of public policy. And this is why it's so important for the mayor and other elected public officials to take this stand, that as a matter of public policy by the elected officials, that this particular racist attitude is not one which will dominate our public life nor our public institutions. And so it seems to me that this is terribly important, that they understand this, and that anyone who proclaims otherwise is not going to be a public official. That is, that anyone who proclaims this, as far as we are concerned, already has discounted himself from the arena of what American public life is about. And this is why it seems to me it's terribly important. So we need two things. And I want to respond to one other thing which I heard, which I think is important, and that is that we do need, I think, some kind of good articulate statement which is going to use the techniques of public relation and the public information to get our point across. But I also want to add a word of caution, because I keep hearing it over and over again whenever it seems to me people feel somewhat criticized about where we are. And that is that this is not the kind of thing that's going to be done solely by that. If you're going to be talking about it in public relations and public information, you've got to have something substantial behind it. And that we cannot magnify a little progress and say it's great progress. We cannot magnify better than tokenism or 10 or 11% tokenism into saying we're really making substantial progress. But it seems to me that the substantial progress should go forward with a dedication that although this cannot be done overnight, it can be done. It can be done in a foreseeable time that a kid who was born today can see in his lifetime when he gets to be a man, he lives in a totally, entirely different kind of world. And that means that we can have nothing less than a 20-year plan which says this has got to be eradicated totally in that lifetime of that youth, or something less than that. There has to be a timetable behind it as evidence of our dedication to it. And that means, it seems to me, programs which are substantial beyond public relations. These are ones that affect every institution that we have in our society that people participate in. So that I think I would reiterate that although we need to have public relations and to tell our story well, that we also need the kind of commitment that this is the number one problem, that we have something substantial behind it.
I'd like to go back to something that Leon said at the last meeting that I think is very pertinent. I think again, the minorities are dialoguing. I think again, they're articulating well. But I don't think that they're giving the public officials or anyone else on the other side of the fence an opportunity to talk and to express themselves. It seems as though they're a little quiet. It seems as though the dialogue is all one-sided. So I would suggest that the minorities, et cetera, would keep quiet a minute or two and allow other people a chance to articulate well.
Phil, if you can be non-minority here first. We'll listen to you as the last representative of something called minority groups.
Thank you. I guess my main concern, as I'm hearing the dialogues as we're going on, is the fact that we're talking at a real top level basis, if you will, and I'm very concerned with the idea of how to get this down to the gut level, to where it really counts, the people that are going to implement any particular actions, this idea of transference of values, what we hold to be important, to get them down, the responsibilities of the people, for example, the feelings of the people toward the schools, getting their youngsters to be part of the plan, or the feelings toward the police, or toward any given group. And I think so far we've been hitting up here, and I think that somehow we're going to have to get down to this again, the corniest thing, the grassroots, you know, or the gut level approach, and figure out programs to implement these things, or ideas, or how to get the responsibility where it really counts, in the home. I think that this should be taken into consideration somewhere along the line.
What about some of the majority reacting? Some of the non-minority public officials? Administrative head?
How about
all of you? May I use Joe's kind of observation also from last time to put someone on the spot, but I think he can take it and it's not a negative on the spot. Inspector Gore made a very good observation also, similar to the mayor's last time. He said the police department, as one department, knows very well what the problems are. And he went on to talk about them for a moment. And it was pointed out in the minutes that day that he did this, and I thought it was beautiful also. Maybe I could put him on the spot and ask him to react today as he has now observed today, or is this too much on the spot?
I don't mind. The feeling I have is that the newcomer to this group is that I'm, once again, the second team for all purposes, to clarify, for all purposes in this meeting, I am the chief of police. I speak for him, I speak for the department. The policy-making process on the police department is not a one-man situation. It's an eight-man situation. I am one of the eight men. I could be here almost every time. Chief would be a hit-and-miss situation. I found when I attended last week, I was in the position of having to catch up to understand what you were talking about. Today, I understand much more. I hope by next week or next time we meet, it will be better yet. So I hope you feel that I'm the second team, because no policy is made on the department without my knowledge and my participation.
My reaction to your last questions, used by an example, my mother received a couple years ago a couple traffic citations, so now she speaks of police officers as cops. And very sweet, wonderful woman. And every time we get into a conversation, she says cop and I say police officer. Used to make her mad, but now it's a joke with her. I think this is the kind of thing we're talking about. I've been under the impression that we in San Diego are trying our best to improve the employment situation, and I see now that we have to improve the employment situation plus. Maybe I'm guilty of being one of these people that try to get to the answer in a hurry. Let's get underway, because I sincerely believe in it. But I would like to see us head toward what are the next steps, the next areas, where, what is the format here that we're leading toward? I am in complete agreement by next April we should have accomplished something, so we don't have the kinds of concern that we had this last April. I think we are trying to elect the employment program. We learned last year that we should have had before the city council, long before the middle of June, the program to employ 68 extra people. We will have that next year, earlier, so for several reasons, so we don't run into a problem with the Civil Service Commission and the like. But those are things that are underway. What is the next step? How do we enforce this brotherly love? How do we get the feeling when we sit in a meeting that person's got the same, that the fact that his color of skin is no different? Some of the things that come to our office, and again, you go back to the employment situation, are that we do have a certain standard for a job. People question, why don't you have a Negro in this job? We would like to. The fact that I feel the color of the skin makes no difference. We want to find one that can handle this kind of a job. I was in a monthly meeting that we have with the top level people out at the University of California here a week ago, and this very thing was discussed. I was advised that there will be 30 or 40 top-level students who would not have had the opportunity to go to college, would be going to the University of California, San Diego, this year, because they've got talent and ability. Now, hopefully, some of these people can rub off. Maybe they can stay right here in this community and take over in some of these positions. These are reactions I'm getting. I think this is what you want to know from us about where we're going. But I think generally, I'd, I'd like to see us try to structure the problems we're after and what are we pointing to here in the next 3 or 4 or 6 months.
Let's get some other public officials first if we can.
I just wanted to raise a question, Carol, if I may. Why are you doing this, Minnow?
Why am I doing...
Why are you involving yourself in the whole area trying to make this a better situation, say, just say, employment-wise?
Well, I've come to believe that any part of our society that doesn't have the same opportunity as another part, we should concentrate on and try to assist. I think that as a community, as a city, the role of city government is for the purpose of providing the social, the grassroots activities, and I think that we have seen our services, and I think that we've seen that there is a need in this area.
Let me ask you a question and to keep it going.
Right.
Have you noticed any differences, regardless of how you define them, in the city of San Diego between the feelings on the part of the minorities toward City Hall, in quotes, as opposed to the whites of the majority in San Diego toward City Hall? To keep John's idea going.
Well, I've never thought of that question. I think it's hard to say there's more perceptiveness. There is a high degree of perceptiveness of what's going on in City Hall and local government in the Negro community. I think that I'm expressing some points as a relative newcomer, having been in the city only 8 months. However, I think that same degree of perceptiveness exists in the white community to a greater extent than in other cities. I feel that there is not the apathy toward local government and City Hall in San Diego that many communities receive, and I don't know if the balance is different. I haven't sensed an antagonism, if this is what you mean.
No, just a difference in the feelings about City Hall, whether we can say a negative or positive, we can get to later, but what I was trying to do is keep the question before us in terms of John's and Tom's context here. Do we perceive a difference in the way the minorities see things, feel things, perceive things, as opposed to the whites? And maybe some others want to react to this. Public officials.
Yes, I'll comment on that. First of all, the total makeup of our community, you have the majority of the whites, they come from different sections of the overall country, Midwest, the North, the Northwest, the South, and in California. And as they come from a greater degree of forms of government or where they have lived under local government. Basically, of the minorities, they either come from the North, East, Chicago, New York, Detroit area, or from the South. And back East, you have this big political machine. And down the South, the laws are not geared for the minority. And so as we have this big influx of Negroes in our community, naturally much of the concept of City Hall is based from where they came from, where they lived before, I have found that there is a disparity in regards to concept of a city hall. Now, we have many extreme viewpoints of the from the white community as how they look upon city hall too. We see these in referendums, and we see these in every election. Candidates come up representing certain elements, very extreme, very suspicious, and perhaps there are good reasons to be, perhaps there are not. I'm not here to question that, but there is a difference between. You ask the question whether the minority community, how they feel towards, say, the power structure versus the vast majority of community. We're talking about groups in general. There is a difference.
Any other reactions to that? May I ask, again, following Tom's...
May I ask a question on that? Tom, do you feel that this feeling is mainly solely because of the type of government and the laws that are in the states in which they come from, or do you feel that perhaps after arriving in San Diego, the picture that they get here also causes a part of their attitude and feeling?
Yes, I think the great influx from the south to the north. I think there were a lot of disillusionment, and even in California, the fruitful California breadbasket of the West come out here, and things aren't what they say it's to be, and it creates a great inner frustration, and we see much of this frustration exploding throughout our cities, and the discontent, and eventually, it comes to a point, the many leaders of both areas of community come to a conference table like this trying to resolve these areas, these problems. There are no one answers. There are many problems. There has to be many answers. I think the state itself have taken many measures in this. And it doesn't seem to filter down to the hardcore element that perhaps that have this explosive element. It's a well-known fact. Practically all the Negro youngsters graduating out of college have a spot ready for them. In fact, they're probably the most widely sought after recruits of colleges. These youngsters can find a position in the economic base of the community, but the ones that we have the greatest problem are the ones that are not understanding what's available in the laws, and not understanding the structure of our society, how to accomplish some of these ideas that brought them out here in the first place, what was available to them.
Let me rephrase George's question a little different than for you, Tom. Say that we take as a given and equalize the fact that the whites and the other non-whites are all from some other part of the country for the most part, regardless of where they're from, that most people here came from some other place. George is really asking another way, I suspect, whether or not the differences that you admit exist in terms of the minority's feeling about City Hall, whether these differences really come about as a result of something they perceive, something they feel with regard to what's going on right now in San Diego. City Hall's actions right now in San Diego. City public public officials throughout the city, whether it's city as such, school board, what have you. He's asking, is there something right now that has nothing to do with where they came from, but the treatment toward them now makes for this difference?
Are the image
right now that's
John
being projected.
John made a good example of a person stepping off at the airport, seeing only black people carrying bags.
Yeah.
That is an image that they get of this city, that black people only have the menial jobs in this city. Or walking into this building, for an example, and seeing only white people working in the city. They get another image that this city is not an integrated city. This is what they're hiding.
He means right now, regardless of where they came from, for whites came from other places too. He's saying, is this difference related to what he's just outlined?
I think this is not to skirt around it, but we're discussing this thing all real viewpoints. First thing, each of these youngsters are brought up from different backgrounds. And by golly, I was brought up in Logan Heights and went to Memorial. And many of the viewpoints, anybody that might be other than what we were no good, or they took advantage of us, whatever the case might be. And on the other side, they had no feeling or no concept as to the problems involved in this other part of the town. Not that they carry the prejudice, or not that they go out of the way to not associate with other races, but their world is perhaps going to the beaches on Sunday, and their club affairs and maintenance of the yard, their jobs and things. But within the minority community, their prime concern is if he quit this job, can he readily go to another area or another place of business and apply for a job? And feel secure in that respect, can he buy a home where he would like to live? So his concern is entirely different. Now, your question is whether it is a real fact that what created this ill feeling or the suspicion of City Hall is something of the making of City Hall. Now, that is your question. I would say it is perhaps a making of society's structure of the past, and the lack of understanding of what City Hall is really trying to do. I think it's a combination. We have not been able to convey actually what we are trying to do here in City Hall, and also a lack of understanding from the people who feel oppressed that we are not doing it fast enough, because much of it from the background. I think it's a twofold deal.
Okay, Mike.
This about the message communication, especially in our area. We've asked some of the top people to come up here and talk to the community so that they could communicate. Now, every time we've sent somebody up there to talk to them, it seems like they can't get the answer about the harbor area or parts of Logan Heights up there, either housing or what they're going to do with that area. Now, I don't know, and this way, it causes the people from that area to suspect the people from up here that they really don't want to come up here and really tell them what's going to happen in those areas where, like Mr. Howe was saying, that these people that came from other parts of the United States, well, it's not necessarily, it's some of those people that have been in that area too, that they're suspicious of these people.
All right, a couple more replies before reaction, before we have a break, and then I think we're getting at something very important here. John.
Yes, I had a question that I wanted to direct to the mayor.
All right.
I think it's appropriate. He had a great deal of courage last time to make the statement, and I applaud him for it, and he has a lot of courage, I think. But I wanted to ask, in terms of the public and elected officials, what did he mean by we must consider the effect it would have on other people? Does it mean that the politician sublimates the courage and the moral commitment to the will of the larger group of people who might elect him to office? Is this something that a politician worries about all the time?
Well, I'm sure, Johnny, that's something a politician would worry about all of them. But that isn't what I meant in the connotation. Actually, I think that's, even though I did not mean it that way at the time I made that statement, I think it is a consideration that that every one of us is going to have to give some validity to, for the simple reason that if there are to be elected officials, they have to exist by the majority, by the will of the majority. And whatever that majority will might express is the creates the possibility of having an official that will do something in that capacity. And that, but that isn't what I referred to. What I was suggesting when I made that statement, that in order to implement, just let's single out for 1 minute, just one segment, it wouldn't do a bit of good, at least in my mind, for all of us here, including the mayor and the manager and the chief of police and everybody else and all of the Negro leaders in the communities, to sit down and come up to a definition of an answer to a problem, say in employment, unless the people who are in a position to supply the employment concurred in that, in the acceptance of whatever definition you give to, and made the jobs available. Because this is not the capacity that we have to within ourselves, right?
Right. Now,
this is what I was referring to.
Right, and I'd like to ask just one further question along that line. Does it mean then that the industry, say if as a public policy for this community, city officials make a hypothetical statement, we believe in equal rights, we want everybody to practice this in there, you're meaning to suggest that this would have no influence whatever on the industry and business community?
Gosh, I would hope not, John. As a matter of fact, I think already we have seen some appreciable, and somebody criticized us for 10% or whatever it is. But any advancement in this area, I think, is some progress, regardless of how you measure. But I wouldn't say that. But I was only singling that out as one specific example. But you cannot accomplish the purposes of whatever, this or any other problem, unless you are in a capacity to take along with you the people who are the society. And this is why I was so concerned initially, for instance, that we get some definitions that both sides of the fence could understand, so that when we're talking about a specific, everybody is going in the same direction with the same idea. And I honestly don't believe that. And I've used this corny phrase many times over in my political career, and particularly going out and talking to people, not just minority people, but any people, that if they know what I'm thinking and I know what they're thinking, our decisions usually aren't too far apart. It's when we don't know what each other are thinking that we get suspicious, we get apprehensive, we do a lot of things that distort or destroy the very purpose of the thing. And I think, in essence, that's basically what I was trying to say here, that we've got to bring along the total community thinking if we're going to accomplish anything. You can stand up here and be martyrs to a cause, but that doesn't get it done unless you get the support of the community.
May I add, before we get another comment, that what John is opening up is that other question that we haven't quite explored yet.